people say I'm a no count. Others say I'm no good. But I'm just a natural born traveling man, doing what I think I should. Oh yeah, doing what I think I should. And I don't give a damn about a greenback dollar. Spend it fast as I can, or a wailing song and a good guitar. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand.
When I was a little baby, my mama said, hey son, travel where you will and grow to be a man, and sing what must be sung, poor boy,
sing what must be sung. And I don't give a damn about a greenback a dollar, spend it fast as I can, for a wailing song and a good guitar. The only thing that I understand, oh boy, the only thing that I understand.
Now that I'm a grown man, I've traveled here and there. I've learned that a bottle of brandy and a song, the only ones who ever care, poor boy,
the only ones who ever care. And I don't give a damn about a greenback a dollar, spend it fast as I can, for a wailing song and a good guitar. The only thing that I understand, poor boy, the only thing that I understand.
Some people say I'm a no-count, others say I'm no good, but I'm just a natural-born traveling man, doing what I think I should, oh yeah, doing what I think I should.
And I don't give a damn about a greenback a dollar, spend it fast as I can, or a wailing song and a good guitar. The only thing that I understand, oh boy, the only thing that I understand. The only things that I understand, oh boy, the only things that I understand.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right here in North Central Indiana on Moonsday, man. Moonsday. We finally got by all that nonsense. I put up a sign out front. I said, you want to raise taxes? Okay. Tax fireworks. Tax the hell out of fireworks. They're always wanting to tax everything around here. We tax fireworks just as much as you tax cigarettes, and you'll have plenty of money in the coffers, because it sounded like World War III around here, even up until... I figured by Sunday night, I mean Saturday night, it'd all be over. But oh no, Sunday night was just as big as the 4th. So anyhow, let's raise the taxes on fireworks. I think it's a good idea. Solve two problems. Maybe three. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's right here next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern. And that's right next to our Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard. There's plenty of that stuff floating around now, man. I know one way to get the fireworks limited. Put out the rumor that the neo-Nazis are gathering up all these M80s or anything that's got quite a bit of powder in them, and then taking them and putting them in cans and saving them, getting ready for big boom stuff. They're going to be terrorists. Boy, that'll get it stopped real fast. But it's true. Anybody could take fireworks, break them down, and build any kind of a boom they want to. Maybe they're doing it already. Who in the hell knows? Well, I recorded a couple of things here. Let's see a couple of telephone calls and so forth. Let's put them on here and see what's on here. I start putting them together on Friday. Yeah, hell, I don't even remember what they were.
Yeah, before Seawolf here. I'm up here in Reno. I got squeezed hard by the Boomtown. It stuck me with a $90 room and then another $20 in tax and resort fee. Anyway, just want to let you know how things are going. I'm going to pop down into California and then over to my dad's up there in NorCal. Everything's going okay. Enjoy the fourth. Hey, that message I sent you yesterday, I don't know if you got it, but I'm going to... ATT, happy 4th, Seawolf here.
Message, I'm glad that you're still there, providing all these insights and information. It's greatly appreciated. And today is the 4th of July, and, you know, this is, to me, everything you said is true, absolutely true. I would just add to what you said, that the 4th of July is an excuse for a lot of yahoos... get drunk, make a lot of noise, make jerks of themselves, set off fireworks. They don't even know what they're celebrating or why they're celebrating. It's just a day off, you know, unless they're government employees and they get a day off with pay, and a three-day weekend, a paid weekend. So I'm glad it's raining. We need the rain anyway here in the Northeast, but we also need to damper on these stupid, idiotic festivities because... if you don't even know what you're celebrating, if you don't even know why you're getting drunk and acting like a jerk, you know, why, you know, then you forfeited your right to enjoy the holiday, the way I look at it. But, again, this is just a holiday for the yahoos to get drunk, listen to the nigger ball games on the radio while they're, you know, fishing, while they're in their speedboats peeing off into the water. It means nothing. It's just another excuse to get stupid, drunk, and obnoxious, so I'm glad it's raining today. The yahoo's going to have no choice but to sit inside and watch TV or stare out the window. That's all they're good for. Thanks for your excellent message, and I look forward to your next one. And it's too bad it's so quiet out there. More people need to respond. I mean, put a lot of effort into these shows and these messages. I know it, and I appreciate it. I hope other people do. I'm sure many other people do as well. Till next time, so long.
Yeah, I've seen on the news about this border, so-called border crisis, which it is, but most people don't realize it, because most people don't care. I mean, you look at the white people that are protesting down there, it's only a handful. I mean, they should be down there, the gun rights people should be down there, because the federal government was threatening to come in with armed agents and soldiers and police to make those buses go back to Marietta, California. There's just a handful of people. Most white people don't give a fuck, especially the Catholics and the Christians, all Christians. They got that crucifix wrapped in the flag, so crammed up, embedded and crammed up their ass, they don't know what to fucking do. They don't know how to think straight. They don't know why. But anyways, there were white people with the Hispanics saying, "Oh, there's no such thing," with signs saying, "No such thing as illegal human beings." You know, and they're all living in La La Land. I say, let them come in, and it's going to open the doors for everybody else. I mean, the Jews that are shipping the Africans to Europe and America from Israel. These Jewish agencies that are doing this, I mean, yeah, they're all going to come. It's going to be the downfall of this Leviathan fucking Jew-run Zog government. All right, Tom. I like being on your soapbox there. This is Pat from Detroit.
Tom, I know you talked about being on the border in 1971 and how the people laughed at you. You know, I wish there was a time machine or a video where these people could see you down there in 1971, especially the people in Texas. They're getting hit in the face really hard now. And I don't know, the white race is, you know, there's an old saying in Germany about blue-eyed people being very naive. And, you know, some of the Germans are brown-eyed, but a lot of them are blue-eyed. But the Germans, they know who they are, and they're right. White people, the blue-eyed people, are very naive, man. Extremely naive. They really thought letting all these Hispanics in here wasn't going to change anything. You know, and I could understand in 65, they probably, you know, the Kennedys lied to them, said immigration really wasn't going to change. Hell, the country was 90% white. I could see why the gullible sheep probably thought, well, hell, he's a white man. He ain't going to lie to us. You know, hell, everywhere I look, I see white people. You know, if they could, damn, man, oh, shit. We could just go back in time and change things. But we can't.
Well, there's some pretty good calls there. I want to talk about if we could go back to the 70s when I was on the border. I don't think it'd make any difference. Not enough difference. The white race has the herd instinct, and they follow the directions of the ruling class, no matter how much they deny it. They may follow them in different ways. You can follow the ruling class and the Democrats, the progressive struggle, and you can follow them in the right wing. But you're still following the ruling class, and until the ruling class says it's okay, nothing changes. It's usually, the change usually comes from disenchanted people in the ruling class that are unhappy and go to war against their own class. And then they're more than happy to draft you and me to help them out. But I'm afraid that's the way it is. And if the white race here in North America was going to do anything important about race, they'd have done it a long time ago. That doesn't mean that we should give up. That doesn't mean that we should quit talking about it and thinking about it and even planning about it. But it does mean that it's going to be a certain amount of time as the empire deteriorates. And it will. There's one thing that you always know, that an empire sooner or later will deteriorate. And then what happens? Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. Now, here's an interesting clip. There's a guy, I think his name's Jay Davis or something. He's up there on the web. I accidentally run into him. He uses any four-letter word he wants to use, and he doesn't seem to worry about stamping on anybody's toes. But if you're goody two-shoes, it's not might not be the best show, and for goodness sake, don't ever let the kids listen to it. He's sort of like a modified Howard Stern, if you get my point. But he made a statement the other day about these mostly blacks that are jumping on people to knock them out with one hit. And this following clip has to do with that. Okay, I'm going to play it for you.
Sometimes it's 50, sometimes it's 8, and they just start sending all kinds of shit. And they send me political stuff and all that I immediately erase, and immediately get rid of, delete, whatever it is. I don't want to lie. I don't care about it. And so they go, hey, you told a story the other day, which is true, about two kids who tried to hit a guy and do the knockout thing, and they did. They got him, and the guy was an older guy, and I don't know how big or little he was or whatever, but these two kids decided he should be a target, and they tried to do the knockout game where they hit you as hard as you can, and one videos it, and you try and knock the person out or kill them with one punch. The guy got a gun, and this guy said, you know, he says, do you know that the kid he shot was 16 years old? And the guy that they tried to hit ran him down and shot him and gunned him down in the back, shot him in the back. The kid was running away. How would you like it if that happened to your son? My kid wouldn't be playing the knockout game. And hello, I think it's perfectly all right. If you're a dumb 16-year-old thug and you're playing the knockout game, and a really mean son of a bitch you fuck with gets a gun and shoots your fucking ass, you deserved every ounce of lead. Every ounce. I love these guys. They're 50 years old. Like those five guys that were accused of the rape of the woman in the park, and you find out they really are scumbags. And they all go, oh, when we were young, we were really bad. But now we've been in jail for 28 years, and we're okay now. We're nice people. Yeah, give them each $4 million apiece. They were scumbags then. They did something. They went to jail. Okay, if they didn't rape her, they raped somebody else probably. They certainly robbed people and hurt them. Jesus. It's unbelievable.
You know, I've been talking about this thing like we ought to eliminate holidays. I don't know. Maybe based on the black KKK body count, maybe it's good to have long weekend holidays. Listen to this out of Chicago this morning.
One person remains in custody for the murder of a Gary police officer. That officer was shot and killed in his squad car over the weekend. Tanya Francisco is at Gary Police Headquarters with the latest on this. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Courtney. Now, this investigation is being handled by the Lake County, Indiana Sheriff's Police, but the mayor of Gary, Karen Freeman Wilson, is vowing to do everything within her power to find out who killed Officer Jeffrey Westville. His body was found on what would have been his 47th birthday. Now, someone driving near the intersection of 26th Avenue and Van Buren Place found Officer Westville slumped over his driver's seat of his patrol car just before 6 o'clock yesterday morning. That person called 911, and Officer Westville was later pronounced dead of a gunshot wound. Tips started pouring in, and that led officers to a home about a block away from where the shooting took place, where they arrested three young men, one of which was taken to the hospital for a possible gunshot wound. Well, after questioning all three, eventually two were released, but the one that remains in custody, police are calling a person of interest. Westerfield was a 19-year veteran of the Gary Police Force, an Army veteran who served during Operation Desert Storm, and an avid motorcycle rider. He leaves behind four daughters from a previous marriage and a fiancé. They had just bought a house and were planning to get married next month.
I didn't like his job. Now we all see why I didn't like his job. This is it. They took my world away. They took my best man away. They just took him.
His fiance saying she is full of anger and wants answers. Well, we're hoping to get an update on that investigation later this morning. Reporting from Gary, Indiana, Tanya Francisco, WGN News.
All right. Thank you, Tanya. Another police officer in Indiana was shot and killed while in the line of duty. Indianapolis police officer Perry Wren was killed while responding to a report of shots being fired. Wren and another officer were approaching a group of people in an alley when they were shot at. Wren was killed. The alleged shooter was also shot and is in critical condition at this point. Wren was a 22-year veteran of the force. It was a violent holiday weekend. At least 11 people were killed and more than 50 wounded in shootings across the city. The most recent shooting happened at a barbecue near 110th and Troop around midnight. Police have not released the woman's identity, but they say she was in her 40s. She suffered a gunshot wound to the head and was pronounced dead at the scene. And three people were shot near South Escanaba and 81st Street around 11:30 last night. Authorities say multiple shots were fired at police while they were investigating a separate shooting. One person was shot in the head, another in the leg, and a third person's injuries are unknown. Police were involved in five shootings, two of them deadly. Chicago police shot and killed 16-year-old Warren Robinson after he led police on a chase in the Gresham neighborhood Saturday evening. Police say the boy was hiding under a car when they caught up to him. Police say Robinson repeatedly ignored their demands to put a gun down.
He's coming out from under the car with the gun in hand, again pointing it at an officer that's standing there. At that point, he's shot. He's told again after he shot to drop the gun, refuses to do so, still has his finger on the trigger. The officers again defend themselves.
In a separate incident, on Friday, police shot and killed a 14-year-old Pedro Rios in the Portage Park neighborhood. Police say Rios took off running when they tried to stop him. Officers say they opened fire when Rios responded, pointing a large revolver at them. A 10-month-old baby falls from a second-story window in the city's South Side area. It happened around 7 o'clock last night in the 700 block of East 93rd Street. The grandmother says she believes the infant was asleep in bed near a window when...
You kill one person, it is as though you have killed all of mankind. Also says, find and slay the believer wherever you may find them. You see, scripture can mean anything you want it to mean because it has everything in it that you need. If you are a misogynist, you will find plenty of evidence in all the scriptures to validate your view. If you are a feminist, you will find plenty of material in the same scripture to validate your view. If you are a believer in peace, you could use the Quran, the Gospels, and the Torah to argue your view. If you are a believer in war, you could use the same exact scriptures to argue your view. This becomes fundamentally a problem that, you know, there is a conflict between the scripture and interpretation, the way that we approach scripture. So, unfortunately, it becomes almost impossible to appeal to scripture when trying to argue against misogyny, against totalitarianism, against violence, because those who espouse those views can simply use the same scripture to argue for them. Instead, all we can do is argue our particular interpretation with the same full-throated confidence as the misogynists and the warmongers do. I think for a lot of people they would say, well, look, if religion is responsible for these acts of violence, then let's just get rid of the religion and the violence will go away. But no sophisticated person actually believes that to be the case.
Well, did you hear about the British that were going to recruit from these rebels down there in Syria, take them all out and train them all, 110,000 of them, and send them back and to wipe out Assad? Talk about war lovers, war criminals, crying about people. Oh, the poor civilians that are dying. Oh, the poor people of Assyria. As they try to prepare to get ready to do something that you know is going to kill them by the hundreds of thousands. But so far, evidently, they have not deployed those troops. Well, I see the senior citizen Nazi hunters, or hunted, are hard at work again. German hunters, I'm not going to use the word Nazi because they were Germans, no matter whether you agree with the National Socialists or not, they were Germans. German hunters in Germany are on the trail of 17 more former SS guards who worked at the death camp of Majdanek in occupied Poland during the Second World War. Four women are among the suspects said to have helped herd victims into gas chambers, or who were part of mass shooting parties, which claimed the lives of 80,000 to 150,000, or maybe it was 20 million. Most of them, twos. I wonder, why don't they separate them and say they were Germans? Were they Polish? Were they Yugoslavian? Because while these people may be religious Jews or some kind of Jew spinoff, they were part of these countries. And so it would seem to me that they should use the nationality of the people who went to the camps to be more important than the fact they were Jews. Majdanek was a hybrid facility which also served as a concentration camp and a source of slave labor. Germany's Central Investigation Agency for National Socialist German war crimes, recently tracked down several Auschwitz camp guards in the country and handed files over to various regional prosecutors who are now mulling the charges against them. And our lone wolf had a note on this. Notice how no one from the corporations of Bosch, Krupp, and so on are pursued at all. They will chase after a single German conscript, but ignore the corporations who have made millions. It's exactly what I've been saying for, seems like, ages. And also the ones in Russia that they haven't gone after. No, it's all a scam. And it's a good lesson not to join any military, no matter what country it is, because you may end up like this, where your own people, after 50, 60 years, are dragging you out of senior care centers and throwing you into the court and trying to get you found guilty of some big crimes so they can do what? Throw you in jail for the last few years of your life. So that's the way it is. And I would not, if I knew what I know then, what I know now, I would not have joined the military. However, I must say, I was smarter than the average dork. I went in for specific training in school and got the school and never had to see any infantry training at all and all that kind of stuff. But it could have happened. It could have happened. And what's the difference whether they betray you this way or they betray you by throwing you into dirty, unkept hospitals, VA hospitals, and have these Filipinos and all kinds of wogs from the Southeast Asia working on you. So, I mean, you know, what's the difference? They're throwing you aside. They don't give a shit about veterans unless they're some rich veteran, upper middle class veteran, maybe. I sent this out to you earlier, but She Wolf Southern California sent this to me either late last night or early this morning. Today, Monday, riot-geared Federals are supposed to be in Murrieta, California to block the streets to let the buses in with the juvenile delinquent Mexicans. I don't know. I don't think that's been on regular news. Maybe it has. I don't know. Well, a little information here from the Israel. Hundreds of Israeli residents from Gush Etzion were disturbed to see a Nazi flag flying over the Arab town of Beit Umar yesterday, July 6th. Actually, that wasn't a Nazi flag. It was the official flag of Germany, a National Socialist Party flag. The large flag is visible from Route 60, the main routes in the area. Residents notified the IDF about the affront, but they have so far failed to act. Beit Umar, a town of 13,000, is located in northwest Hebron, close to where the bodies of three abducted Israeli teens were discovered in a shallow grave last Monday. A resident of Karmai Sur, who saw the flag, told Tazpit News Agency that this is reminiscent of what happened 75 years ago. Quote, "The Arabs are no longer fearful of hiding their intentions," unquote, he said. Quote, "To kill, destroy, and uproot the Jewish people," unquote. This is not the first time a swastika has been hoisted over Beit Umar. Tazpit News Agency reports that in May 20th, 2013, that a National Socialist flag was flying over the town, very close to one of their mosques. The IDF and civil administration at the time ordered the Palestinian Electrical Company to remove the National Socialist flag that had been hung on one bite Umar's electrical wires. The offending flag was subsequently removed. There's a program on the internet called Opie and Anthony on Sirius, and it's a little wild for me. It's more younger bunch on there, but there's a guy on there that's supposed to be the conservative on the show named Anthony Cumia. He's been fired from his show Opie and Anthony on Sirius XM, the latest entertainment personality to be punished for his behavior on social media. Cumia hosts the show along with Greg, Opie Hughes, and comedian Jim Norton. This year, Opie and Anthony celebrated 20 years of broadcasting together. Well, you're as in bad a shape as those camp guards that are 95. But it's interesting when you peel away the very thin layer how the so-called conservative becomes radical racist in a heartbeat. He was taking pictures in a park when a black woman started yelling at him, calling him a white motherfucker for taking her picture. The fight ensued online on social media with him calling her a cunt. He was supposedly the conservative on the show, though neither were conservative enough to hold my attention for long. It is geared for a younger crowd than I. Now XM Sirius listeners are dropping their subscriptions in droves. I dropped my subscription when they dropped Quinn and Rose. The liberal programming doesn't make a dime for XM. The conservative shows carry the day and pay the bills. They have to pay for the liberal programs to make XM fair. The continual pandering to the handful of progressives and the constant abuse of the conservatives will soon spell the end of satellite radio. You can't bite the hand that feeds you for long. So that's true. The conservatives support the radio shows much more than progressives. Progressives have a hell of a hard time staying on the air. And in some ways it's too bad, because there's a lot of things that they say I agree with, and things that the other side says that I agree with too, the, you know, real conservatives. So it's a bitch no matter what. But anyhow, that just shows you how they're getting to the point where they're firing people all over the place for daring to tread on the racial situation. Here's another comment on it on this website that's talking about this Opie and Anthony situation. I'm guessing, purely guessing, that the black woman got into his face without reason, except that he's white. Called him more racial epithets than I know, and he tweeted about it, using racial and sexual epithets to characterize her. She's a no-name, ordinary person. He's a very public media figure. His employer decided that his outburst, if he remained undisciplined, would bring their company into disrepute. Oh. It's their choice to make, and it's their customer choices to make whether they want to continue to use the company's service. As a teen, my son was falsely accused of shortchanging and racism by a 40-ish black man and sent home for a very direct but non-racial negative response. My son was vindicated, as his manager knew would be the case, by the count of his cash drawer. My son had been taught by me that skin color means nothing regarding the worth of humanity of any human being, in almost those exact words. After this incident, I felt horrible because I had not warned him or his sisters that there are black, Hispanic, and so on racists out there who hate him for his skin color and who would gladly falsely accuse him of being racist. Race card players are contemptible in my books. Back to Anthony. He's at the receiving end of a double standard. The woman who got in his face is probably getting high-fived and drinks from friends for having got a white boy. And Anthony got canned. But it's a double standard inherent in his line of business, one with which he has prior experience. His task once recovered from this weekend is to do what it takes to make SXM regret their move. Incidentally, they call that web place conservativeunderground.com, in case you're interested. Sounds pretty wimpy to me. Boy, those Islamics, you gotta love them. A couple of weeks ago, the New York Times Magazine published a harrowing account of a journey in Somalia that went seriously awry. Well, that's because they were in Somalia. A Canadian 20-something named Armanda Lindhout had gone there to work as a freelance journalist. But soon after she arrived, she and her ex-boyfriend, Nigel Brennan, were kidnapped and held for ransom. Because their families were not wealthy, Lindhout and Brennan were held for almost 400 days. As you can imagine, they were starved and abused physically, and in Lindhout's case, sexually, by these ravenous niggers. In the most harrowing scene, Lindhout one day manages to escape out of a bathroom window and runs to a nearby mosque. Wow, you'd think she'd be safe there, huh? Wrong. There she finds the devout indifferent to her plight, with one exception. I saw Abdullah pushing through the crowd in my direction, his head lowered like a bull's. I screamed as he dove at me. He caught my feet and my hands and began dragging me in the direction of a side door. I clawed at the ground as he pulled. I don't remember any of the onlookers trying to stop him, the onlooking devout Islamics. It was only the woman who tried. She clamped down on my arms and pulled me back, using her weight for leverage, letting loose a torrent of Somalia. For a few minutes, my body was strung between them and Abdullah, yanking my legs while the Somali woman proved herself to be a stubborn anchor. We were being towed along, the two of us, linked like train cars, inch by inch across the floor of the mosque. My shoulder sockets ached to the point where I thought they would pop. Finally, she could hang on no longer. The piece was an excerpt from a book, A House in the Sky, that Lindhout has now written about the experience with the journalist Sarah Corbett. It comes out tomorrow, and the reviews are raves. Everyone agrees that it's effectively told as a story. It's nearly guaranteed to sell because America loves a captive narrative. Proof: Emily Bazelon at Slate called it as haunting and captivating as Emma Donoghue's blockbuster literary success, Room. Well, there you go. And if you say, of course, if you criticize these ape Islamics over there in Somalia, then they try to shut you up by calling you a racist. Well, of course we're racist. Didn't you learn anything from Black Hawk Down? Of course, you shouldn't have been there, number one. But when these dirty, greasy niggers do kidnap somebody, that is one excuse I think I would support in going in after them with crack teams of highly motivated, take-no-names people. And like in this case. Because that's the only thing these filthy niggers understand, and that is to kill every one of them. Kill them, every one of them. All that bullshit about not being able to sleep at night and having bad dreams because of it. You should sleep like a baby. But as far as generally speaking, we shouldn't be in Somalia. And a lot of places where these people like this girl goes, they're walking right into something, a quagmire, that their liberal brain can't comprehend. All over the Middle East and all over the world, and even in the United States, people go to places where women walk into places with this progressive mindset, and they're like fruit, low-hanging fruit, to these, I won't call them animals, I don't know what I'd call them. I don't know. I don't think there's a word to call them. But when they attack and rape and pillage and kill them with extreme prejudice. As long as they're killing each other, like over the weekend, 10 murdered and 60 shot, it's not my problem. Just like it's not their problem that white people and the white community have problems with each other. It's not our problem. Because just like the Middle East, if you step in, that gives them the excuse like a sack of hornets to come after you. There's nothing makes alliances faster than if somebody off the block comes in to try to solve a problem on the block. People may hate each other on the block, but if anybody comes in from another block, they all come together to fight that bunch. When are we ever going to learn? Of course, the government knows that. They know it, and they use it to their advantage. But especially white girls, white women that go into these pits of hell, worse than hell. What can I say? They've been raised to love everybody, and we're all equal, and skin color doesn't make any difference. So you can't do anything for them. And if you try to dissuade them from going into these pest holes, they just call you names and try to get you fired or whatever. So you're just going to have to sit back and say, okay, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel, go ahead. Go ahead, get kidnapped, get raped, get flayed, and the whole bit. If you live, you might have learned something. But I doubt it, because they're going to say, oh, well, they're not all like that. Well, you see what happened in this story? She tried to escape into a mosque, which is like a church. And people not only joined in the fray against her, but most of them didn't do anything about it. Get the message, boys and girls. If they don't listen, they'll have to feel. And don't risk yourselves in these situations on the street. I know all you white guys want to be champions and save the damsel, but I'm afraid it doesn't work that way. Here was an interesting comment I picked up off the web. Reverse racism and affirmative action are jargon words that appear to correct a non-existent wrong. Affirmative action is also called positive discrimination. That's discrimination, folks, and it's always whites, usually straight white men who are discriminated against. I'm a racist. And a proud one. Most people are racist. Some of them aren't so proud. That's foolish. Let me put it this way. I have a house and I decide who is allowed to enter. I give preference to my family. I like my neighbors. But while I will invite them into my house occasionally, I will not let them live there. I will never refuse to let a member of my family live there. Is that bad? Either way, I don't care. It's what most people do. Extend the principle a little. I have a country. Now I'm a racist. You'll note that I don't hate anybody. I just prefer my own kind. We mostly prefer to our own kind, but racists are just people who tell the truth. That's true. But it takes more than just a libertarian idea of I'm okay, you're okay. I'm racist, you're racist. It means letting people alone. And, of course, it means, in reality, total separation. If the blacks have the power to overrun you, they will. I promise. I assure you. Take it to the bank. And if you don't have the power to stop them, resist them, and push them back, then you're going to be slaughtered. Or, even worse, enslaved. Now, here's some pretty tough statements from this Anthony Cumia from Opie and Anthony. They got fired. I think people are getting pissed off. They're getting pissed off. Quote, so I'm taking a picture in New York City and a black girl who was in the frame punched me in the face. I called her a fucking blah, 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 because that's what she was. Then she punched me five more times. She's lucky I was a white legal gun owner or she'd be dead. Then five blacks started giving me shit. I told them to back the fuck off. This wasn't their show. The cunt then punched me again. Seems white boys don't hit back. Lucky savage. Wish a cop was around, although she said she'd tell them I sexually harassed her. Lying cunt. I hope she gets shot in her ass. Fuck face. Let's see here. What else is on here? Wait a minute. I gotta get this. Hold on here. Let's see. And he said, they aren't people. I'm fucking livid. I was an illegal savage. If I was an illegal savage, I'd have her shot. The IR violence in her was so predictable. I hope she gets killed. In a jungle out there in our cities after midnight, violent savages on the streets. They all came to defend this pig. I had to yell at dogs. Let's see here, what else? Savage, violent animals prey on white people, easy targets. This cunt had no clue how lucky she was. She belted me 10 times, and I had a gun. So what started all this? I was taking a picture of Times Square. She was in the picture. Violence was her answer. The animal kept walking into my arm, and I had up as a block, saying, don't touch me. Then would hit me. I hope a homeboy beats her to death. The automatic jump to violence in that community is astounding. No discussion. It starts punching at the least little thing. Uncivilized. No, an animal bitch used to be an instinctual violence on me. I retrained myself from putting it to sleep. Did you hit her back? I was fooled by my upbringing. Don't hit a woman, but this was an animal. I should have smashed its face. The switch to violence is immediate. No discussion, just violence. When will that be addressed? Oh, right, never. Slavery did it. Oh, okay. There's a deep-seated problem with violence in the black community. Try to address it and you'll be exiled to Racistville. But it's real. So that's a little bit of why this Anthony got sacked. How about that? Because he told the truth. Well, let's see what Maxie Waxie's up to right now. He's usually got some pretty tough words and crap to throw at the bankers.
Staff were caught buying 59 pence potato wedges at the downmarket supermarket Aldi and then selling them to Domino's customers for £3.49. Of course, this is merely trickle-down central banking, where the central banks sell the crappy product of cheap money, the 59p potato wedge in this case, to banks who then sell it on to you at a 500% or more markup. It's still the same cheap, crappy, toxic debt money product from the central bank. No value has been added, and nor will wealth creation, the nutrition for the economy and wages, ever be found in a cheap money potato wedge. It's just repackaging the same crap and marking it up, Stacey.
Well, we're going to look at some of these horrible potato wedges of central banking being sold at as high-priced, risky assets. World's ATM moves to Frankfurt as Yellen's Fed slows cash. As Janet Yellen winds down the Federal Reserve's money printing operation, Mario Draghi is boosting Europe's cash supply. That means the dollars Yellen's Fed is removing could be compensated for by cheap euros from the European Central Bank. The result may be enough cash sloshing around to underpin this year's run-up in risk assets.
Yeah, I told you all about this 6 months ago, remember? Ben Bernanke and then Janet Yellen, they started something called tapering, and I said that's nonsense because on a global basis there is no taper because the European Central Bank would really pick up the slack and then add even more to the global supply of fake money during this quantitative easing period. And that's exactly what this story is telling us. Tapering is a lie. There is no tapering because one big global slush fund and the ECB picked up and did much more than the $10 or $20 billion a month that Bernanke and now Yellen is taking away from the system. There is no tapering because you can't taper a Ponzi scheme. So this is going to continue until two outcomes, A, a bond collapse, or B, a war.
Well, also, you know, the fact is that they have these, you know, the cheap potato wedge in this case is the cheap money. And then they're just pouring it into risky assets, which is just the same potato wedge, but sold at 500% more. It hasn't gone through a process of actual value added or wealth creation. None of this cheap money, this ATM, whether it's being operated by Janet Yellen or Mario Draghi, none of it is actually going into creating a sustainable economy. It's the same exact potato wedge, whether it's from Aldi or at a pizza chain. You know, it's the same thing, just a different price.
Well, it's a derivative within a derivative within a freeze-dried coffee within a chicken McNugget within a nonsensical balance sheet within a fraud within a central bank within an overall collusion going on globally. So, in other words, it's a derivative of a derivative. Like, take a chicken McNugget, for example. Here you have a reconstituted chicken vapors that are shaped into something that, you know, is a nugget. I mean, last I checked, the chicken didn't have a piece on their body that you could call a nugget. There's a leg and a wing, but not a nugget. But there you have a chicken McNugget. It's really made out of reconstituted chicken or the hamburgers there or that pink slime. But that's not enough of a markup for a fast food chain like Domino's. They have to get derivatives from another place that sells cheap garbage to people and calls it food. And that's a derivative of a food product like a wedge or a potato wedge. It's probably not really potatoes. It's not really even a wedge. It's just like a shape like a wedge. It was probably just a reconstituted chicken McNugget that they found on the floor somewhere and repackaged it. And then they buy that on the cheap and mark it up over their Domino's, you know, for another huge markup and profit. It's exactly like central banking. They take garbage in their vaults. Remember the guy last week who pooped at Barclays? I'm sure that the rating agencies would give that a AAA rating. And they would sell it on to some pension fund as a billion-dollar poop collateralized bond obligation.
But also, the central bankers, what they do is confuse people in much the same way as what we saw with this Aldi's and the pizza chain. And the fact is that if anybody went into Aldi's and saw these frozen potato wedges going for £3.49, they'd be like, what? What is this, like a Waitrose or Whole Foods? No way. I'm not going to pay £3.49 for frozen potato wedges. But they go to Domino's and they pay that much. The same thing with here. If people really had to pay the cost of all these risky assets, of all these housing bubbles, if they really knew the true cost of it, I don't think they would buy it. I think we're being sold this. We don't understand value anymore. We don't understand the cost of things. It's just being rebranded and repackaged.
Well, it's cognitive dissonance, which, of course, is very handy in the toolkit of the central banker and retail banker these days, who likes to sell you things like risk-free pension services that turn out to be exploding pension, you know, problems that end up going nowhere and you're completely bankrupt. So, again, it's all about mis-selling. Remember Lloyds Banking? I think that was their specialty in the U.K. was mis-selling, unlike Barclays. With their specialty is LIBOR fraud, or HSBC, their specialty is money laundering. And then Royal Bank of Scotland, of course, they're into the leg-breaking and mafia whacking of their subsidiary of the global restructuring group. So every bank has their own special way to commit fraud here in the UK. If you want to get mis-selling fraud, definitely go to Lloyds.
So to continue on this global central banker theme, here was a headline from Business Insider earlier this week, and it said, the 10 most important things happening in the world this morning. The Fed's Janet Yellen says she is more interested in maintaining a robust underlying finance system than in popping bubbles. The FT says that means there is little chance of an increase in interest rates to head off exuberant stock or bond markets, suggesting that investors will be allowed to inflate and collapse asset bubbles as long as the underlying financial system is strong enough to withstand any shocks.
Well, like I just said, you can't taper a Ponzi scheme. What Janet Yellen is basically throwing in the white towel and saying, this Ponzi scheme, this bubble is beyond any ability to rein it in. So all we can do is watch it blow up to ever more ludicrous levels of ether. And then when it does blow up, we're not going to take any responsibility for it, just like Greenspan never took any responsibility for the two or three major bubbles he created and popped. And the misery that they inflict on people is completely avoidable. If they only did what they were supposed to do as central bankers, like Mark Carney here in the UK, he said that the real estate in London is in a bubble. The definition of the job of a central banker, as it was described many years ago, is to take away the punch bowl when the party gets too raucous. So Mark Carney, by not raising interest rates right now, is imposing a destructive real estate bubble onto the people here in London and around the UK because he's either too timid or he's corrupt to do what he was put there to do, and that is to rein in these bubbles.
So, yes, we talked about the Ponzi scheme element, an aspect of selling potato chip wedges of cheap money and flipping it for ever higher asset prices, risky asset prices. Now, the other side of that is, in the exact opposite, is we take these public services like the National Railroad, now the National Health, and it stays the same price theoretically, but they reduce the service. They just reduce the quality, and that's the same way of creating the same swap of the potato wedge for a higher price. NHS Cancer Care plans switch to private contracts in £700 million plans. Cancer care in the NHS could be privatized for the first time in the National Health Service's biggest ever outsourcing of services worth over £1.2 billion. A host of private healthcare firms have already expressed interest in securing a £689 million 10-year contract to provide cancer care at four NHS GP-led clinical commission group areas in Staffordshire. So they're going to be handed this major, this is the biggest ever NHS contract for privatized service to take care of cancer care, in particular the end-of-life care.
Yeah, you're right. It's a hollowing out of a service, in this case the NHS, which it works fine, has worked fine for decades, but because it's a $100 billion nest egg or, you know, pot of money that private contractors want to get their greedy mitts on, they've hollowed it out, they've allowed the services to collapse, and now they're going to move in and just privatize it wholesale. This is the beginning of privatization of the NHS. Of course, David Cameron, his lead up to his election, he said he would never privatize the NHS, so they clearly he's lying.
Interestingly, in the United States, that's also the biggest private industry moving into end-of-life care because it's very profitable. They're charging Medicare a lot of money in the United States. They could charge the government a lot of money here, but it requires almost no medical knowledge, no expensive thing. You just give them painkillers.
There's no business like the vegetable business. You know, people, they're in a vegetative state. Yeah. They're in comas. So you put a few tubes in them, and you charge unbelievable amounts of money, and the families are, I'm not going to pull the plug on Uncle Charlie or whatever. Mm. So they just charge them through the nose to keep the vegetables alive. Meanwhile, down at the grocery store, you can't get a decent vegetable. It's all genetically modified junk. You can't get a good tomato. You can't get a good zucchini. But you go to the hospital, there's your parents, your grandparents, their vegetables, and they're keeping them alive. You know, I say, you know, do the right thing. Offer real vegetables during the daytime so people can have healthy lives. And this way they wouldn't need to be plugged into some private health care service run by an American private equity group for 20 years at a huge expense.
So these are, however, these are people who have cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer, pancreatic cancer. They're still alive. They're still, their brains are functioning. They can see and speak and talk. But they're in a lot of pain, and there's no help. There's no more chemo you can do. There's no more surgery you can do. There's no more radiation that could be applied that will extend your life in any way. So they move them to these facilities where you don't need all the medical equipment. You don't need life support systems. You don't need oxygen tanks. You don't need anything but painkillers, some opiates, and that's it. You just hook them up to a machine, pour in the heroin, and that's it. So this is what these. This is why they're so profitable. It's basically the Chicken McNugget factory, in that you could just. There's very low cost to it, and you just hook people up to these machines. But they're charging it as if it's a real high-end sort of medical.
Yeah, and the price of heroin has collapsed because of the Iraq and Afghanistani war. America now runs the biggest opium plantation in the world in Afghanistan, so price of heroin is at rock bottom prices. So their margins on keeping these vegetables breathing for huge costs is cheaper yet again.
So Andy Burnham, the shadow health secretary, says that that David Cameron and his ministers may be reminded that they've never been given the permission of the public to put the NHS up for sale. Piece by piece, they are unpicking the NHS and selling it off to their friends and private health. That's part of the equation, of course. They're selling off to their friends, their corporations. But I want to quickly move on to the last headline, which ties back to central banking. Polish central bank head refuses to resign over tape scandal as it would set dangerous precedent. So Poland's central banker, Mark Belka, was recording promising to boost the economy if the finance minister was fired, not only making an immediate mockery of any naive assumptions about central bank independence, but showcasing that in the new normal, it is central banks and by extension the private banking system which dictates terms and conditions to democratically elected governments.
Yeah, it didn't want to set a precedent of having been fired for breaking the law. That set a dangerous precedent. Because after all the other banks are breaking the law.
The important thing is this facade. Remember I talked about you go into Aldi's and you would never pay £3.49, but you go into Domino's and you'll pay £3.49 for the same exact ingredients. Here we pretend that our democratically elected governments are the ones we give power to through our vote. That's why we go and vote and spend the day voting. And that they control the central banks, and they are the ones that have the ultimate power. But here we're seeing that in Poland, it was a central banker was telling the government to fire that finance minister. I don't want him setting policy. I'm the one who sets policy, whatever.
All right, Stacey. Well, that all comes back to overpriced potato wedges, doesn't it?
That looks like what they're trying to sell us, overpriced potato wedges.
All right, well, stay tuned for the second half, an interview I conducted.
Well, they sure have a cool way of putting it. I love that show. I do. I love it. The dark humor, the black humor of the whole damn thing is interesting. Well, that's it for the state of the race today. I'm sure we didn't cover all the good news, but we'll be back tomorrow on Thursday. And if we didn't offend you today, like I say, always tune back in. I'll try my best to offend you tomorrow, okay? And if you disagree, say something. Send me an email. I'll respond to it. You know, we have people out there who do that. We have disagreements. Usually we don't disagree that much, but on facts and figures and dates and all that kind of stuff sometimes. So anyhow, don't be bashful. I'm not going to send out a hit man or a hit woman to get you. In the meantime, 14-5 and keep your mouth shut. Stay independent as an independent lone wolf or whatever. You know, I begin to... Sometimes these animal shows of showed me that the wild cats in the jungle may have more of our type of natural feelings than even the wolf. I'm sure that some of you have known that. Not a domestic cat, but the closest we can come to it in here in the United States, in most cases, is an alley cat. They don't trust nobody, man, and they're ready to fight on the drop of a hat. I don't know. I'm gaining a lot more respect for the cat family. What do you think? Now, don't expect me to get a cat. I don't mean one of these little rugs that lays around on your couch all day. I mean a stand-up, kick-ass cat.
It was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights. hide from the light on the village green. When I was 17, when I was 21, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for city girls who lived up the stairs with perfumed hair that came undone when I was 21. It was a very good year. It was a very good year for blue-blooded girls of independent means. We'd ride in limousines. Their chauffeurs would drive. When I was 35, the days are short. I'm in the autumn of the year, and now I think of my life as vintage wine from final case. From the brim to the dregs, it poured sweet and clear. It was a very good...